Hello, learners, and welcome to Learn On Podcast.
The science show by kids for kids. I'm your host, Jonsi, and I'm here today with a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Dean Sittig. I'm a professor at the University of Texas, a health science center in Houston, Texas.
Awesome. And so today I'm very excited to be speaking with you about your work in health information technology. So first, to start us off, do you want to tell us what health information technology is and maybe break it down with a simple definition?
Well, I think of it as the computers and the devices that are used to help clinicians and patients sort of communicate in the clinical setting.
And so I'm sure that you've seen throughout your career that this has especially developed in recent years. But can you maybe walk us through and tell us how electronic health records have developed and how this has improved the field of medicine?
Well, the first electronic health records were developed in the late 1960s, and they've been evolving continuously over the past, I guess that's more than 60 or 70 years now. And we've improved the documentation of the healthcare process, which has allowed us to use the computer to create measures of how clinicians are treating their patients, which is a key part of improving the quality of care. And so it seems like we've probably improved the quality of care by collecting a lot of data. It's been very difficult to demonstrate that in large clinical trials, but it seems that everyone would agree that we shouldn't be going back to an old paper-based system that had a lot of illegible writing and things like that. I mean, we used to joke about doctors' handwriting, how hard it was to understand, and now we don't joke about that anymore because now we read a printed prescription.
Right. And can you just maybe elaborate a little bit more on how specifically being able to collect all of this data in like a large quantity would help to improve patient outcomes and patient care?
Well, prior to the use of computers to collect data, what happened in the patient exam room was really between the patient and the clinician. And so to sort of aggregate data across patients, you would have to look at many different paper-based records. And so that would be incredibly time-consuming. A complicated patient could have more than 2 or 3 inches thick of papers documenting their care, if you have a like an older parent that had been having a chronic condition for 20 years, there's a lot of data there to go through. And so we couldn't aggregate it to try to understand sort of how people were being cared for or whether they were being cared for according to best practices. And now by looking at the data, we can easily create a report and find out which patients have had which tests or which medications or things like that. And so that allows us then to feed that information back to the doctors and the healthcare systems so they can start addressing those types of problems.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. I think at least prior to this conversation, I was thinking about electronic health records and how it's improved healthcare in general. I think the first thing that came to mind for me personally was being able to collect a lot of data from many individual patients and grouping that together to make more informed decisions. But I definitely didn't think about how it can also help with synthesizing the data collected within one patient itself, especially if, as you said, they have a very long and complicated medical history. It kind of makes me think about how a couple months back, when I had just seen my pediatrician, we were looking at a chart showing my growth with all of the heights and weights that were collected over the years. And that wasn't even something that I thought about, that they would still be looking at the information that was collected 14 years ago. I think that's definitely something that makes a lot of sense with being able to think about a patient's long-range progress. So, thank you for that perspective. And so, of course, you mentioned how electronic health records make it easier for doctors and for patients as well. But are there maybe any aspects that make it more difficult to manage this system, maybe?
Well, all of this data collection has been a huge burden for physicians. So they're required to now know how to type, for example. And so a lot of the older physicians, in the old days, we used to use a typewriter and we learned to type. But nowadays, if clinicians can't use the keyboard easily to, you know, like touch the keyboard and like not use two fingers, it takes an incredible amount of time to input that data into the system. And so the clinicians are seeing a greatly increased workload. And a lot of clinicians talk about spending 2 or 3 hours after work, like they come home from work at 6, have dinner with their family, and then their family goes to bed at 8 or 9, and then they work from 9 to 11, sort of catching up on the day's work. You know, like, I guess you think when you're going to leave, you know, grade school or high school, you'll not have any more homework. And it turns out that the homework just gets worse. And so they didn't like that homework. Like, you like to go home from your job and be able to, you know, have time with your family and time to, you know, exercise or relax, and you don't want to work some more. And that's been the greatest unintended consequence of the entire electronic health record, is the additional work that it's placed on the clinicians themselves.
Right. I think especially my generation, it's very easy to take it for granted being able to use a computer with ease, since at least me personally, we got computers through our school district when I was, what, like 8 or 9 years old. So it's just muscle memory for me to be able to type really fast. But for someone who isn't used to that, and then combining with that with, I'm sure there's a lot of multitasking that goes into charting and speaking with a patient and getting their history at the same time. So yeah, I guess that's an unintended consequence, and one that extends into other fields as well. Like, since it's much easier to work from home because so many things are available online now, I feel like that kind of blurs the work-life balance and makes it harder to set specific boundaries for when to take a break and when to take time for yourself. So definitely something we should think about more when improving the life and the experience of a clinician.
Yeah, I remember when we first got access to my computer at work from home, and I thought how this is going to be so great, because now I can, you know, go home early and work on something at night and not have to do anything. And it's become, now it's just like I'm on the computer like 18 hours a day. Like, I'm checking it first thing when I wake up, I'm checking it last thing before I go to sleep. And, you know, I'm sort of available to my students or my colleagues. And so that's been a huge change in sort of how I work. And now it seems like it's spread out over 18 hours, you know, 17 or 18 hours a day. It's also, though, made it so I can work, you know, I have colleagues all around the world. And it used to be I only saw them once or twice a year at a different conference. And now I can have conversations with them on a daily basis. And so I'm working on a project with someone in Germany that I, you know, I worked with 30 years ago when I was in graduate school. And, you know, now we're still working on a new project right now. And I have another colleague in Australia the same way. And so it's expanded my horizons, but it's also really blurred that work-life balance into, you know, no balance, I guess is what you call it.
And this kind of bridges into my next question, which is thinking more broadly about the rise of artificial intelligence and just having much higher level technology integrated into medicine. Are there any unintended consequences of this that you've observed?
Yeah, I mean, the most important, I don't know if you've seen, but like ChatGPT is famous for making things up. And they call it hallucinations. Some of the people in medicine don't like that because they say it's not really a hallucination. But anyway, it just makes things up. And so sometimes it'll make up citations, it'll make up new names of medications. Like, we did a project where we sort of asked the computer to critique the treatment of a patient. And so we gave it, here's the patient's problem. We gave it the patient's current medications. And they suggested it should be on another word that sounded like a medication. Like, if you listen to those TV ads, you know, it's not even a medication. It just made it up. And what was really funny is we showed that to 5 physicians, and only one of them noticed that it wasn't a real medication. It sounded so real. And it's very easy to believe the computer. And so we call that automation bias, when you start to believe the computer, whether it's right or wrong, and you don't, you know, critically think about it. So when you say something, I'm thinking, is she saying the right thing? Is she, you know, does she know what she's talking about? And constantly, you know, trying to assess whether we're communicating and know what's going on. When you do that when you see with a computer, a lot of times, you know, like when you are running a spreadsheet or something and you ask it to sum up a column, you wouldn't even consider that number would be wrong. And you don't go back and check it to see, did it really add those numbers right? Like, sometimes I can't believe that's how much money I spent. And when it gets down to the bottom, and I thought, well, there's 100, there's 100. It could be that much, I guess. But I don't check it, you know, like every single number. I just believe it. And so, you know, the computer is right so much that when it's wrong, it's very hard to detect. And that's the real problem in medicine, is how are we going to detect when it's wrong?
Right. Well, first of all, that anecdote is very surprising to me. And I've played around with ChatGPT a fair amount, just out of curiosity's sake, and because I had dabbled in a little bit of artificial intelligence research corresponding to medicine before there was the whole craze of talking about it because of how popular ChatGPT became. But the fact that it could come up with a medication name and that it just passed the eye of multiple physicians is very fascinating to me. And that goes to show that the reason why it became so famous in the first place is because the insurmountable level of creativity compared to past capacities that we've seen with artificial intelligence. And even though that creativity, when harnessed in the right way, can help us to do good things, there's also a really confusing ethical boundary that can become really challenging, especially because when we use computers in this aspect, we're using it because it's under the assumption that they are reliable, that they are correct. Right. And having to go back and check everything would, if anything, make it more counterintuitive and increase the workload of people who are working on these technologies. So definitely something very important to keep in mind.
I think the other thing to think about is, you know, a lot of the times the computer, when the computer's functioning at close to an expert level, it takes an expert to know that it's made a mistake. And so the idea is we'd like it to replace some of the mundane tasks that clinicians do. And if it makes a mistake, how can you expect the patient to know that it made a mistake?
Right.
And so that's where we really get into a risk, is if we try to take the physician, what we say, out of the loop. And so right now, most people are trying to say that the clinician should review everything the computer does and then approve it and then send it to the patient. But if they have to do that, it's not going to save them as much work as if they bypass that. And then the question is, what happens when it tells a patient to do something that's totally wrong? And then who would be responsible when you get the wrong medication, something like that?
Yeah, definitely the responsibility is a big aspect. And I think we're at this very interesting sort of horizon right now, where we are aware of all the capacities that artificial intelligence has. And we've accepted the fact that it could have a significant benefit and significantly improve our healthcare system if implemented in the right way. But also, currently, our models and applications of artificial intelligence haven't yet reached that point of confidence where we can take it out of the physician's hands completely. So
it's also a big problem with, like you see right now, a lot of the big tech companies are laying off programmers and people like that, because the ChatGPT can write code for you so much more efficiently and better than the people. And so the question is, you know, in many towns, large and small, the healthcare system is the largest employer in the town. And so if the way we're going to cut costs is by reducing the number of people involved. And then the question is, what are all those people going to do for a job? Like, we can't have, you know, in a lot of towns, 20 or 30% of the people in a town work for the healthcare system. And so if you think about that way, we can't have, you know, 10% of our people unemployed. That's not a good solution for society. So it's really going to have a chance to have a huge impact on society if it starts to replacing a lot of jobs. Just require it's just hard work, like collecting information from one spreadsheet, another spreadsheet, and putting it together and synthesizing that information. It's not like technically challenging. It just takes a long time to do it. And if the computer could do that, you know, in the snap of a finger, that person's out of a job. And now what are they going to do? That's what I worry about.
Right. But it's interesting though, because so my advisor at school, she's a computer science teacher. And we were just talking about this the other day, because our school has had to implement some very serious policies about plagiarism adapted for ChatGPT. And for teaching computer science specifically, it's very noticeable when someone uses ChatGPT to create code. And this might also be because, like, at a more introductory level of a class, it's more obvious when ChatGPT uses a relatively obscure algorithm that they haven't learned about or something like that.
Yeah.
But the code is also written in a way where, because it's not written by a human, it's not written with the thought process of having it organized in a way where it's easy to go back to it and highlight specific capacities or edit it and try to find a mistake. So again, going back to the idea of having to check over the work that artificial intelligence does, that could make it even more difficult. So something very interesting to consider.
I'll say.
Yeah, and then pivoting back to the idea of electronic health records, how can we, with all this information in mind and thinking about where the future of healthcare is going, how can we optimize its usage to avoid negative consequences like the ones that we talked about? And how do we kind of ensure its safe usage?
Wow, that's a huge question. You know, it's hard to predict unintended consequences. And so once we find them, then we've got to do whatever we can to try to, you know, mitigate those challenges. And so, you know, like my national professional organization has a big project on now to try to reduce the burden of charting on the electronic health record system. That's like the biggest problem right now. And the answer isn't to help clinicians learn to type faster. That's not going to solve the problem. It would help, but what we really need to do is sort of look at the underlying cause of collecting all this data, which is we've got to justify our billing, and we've got to find out different ways of billing for these things. So then when you start to talk about different ways of billing, so the computer, what it's done is it's modified our abilities to, like, it changed the way we could work, and it changed the way we could collect data, which adds new complexities to the people that recorded that data. So now we have to go back and think about, do we need all that data in this way? Is there a better way to record that data? So what people are working on now is what they call ambient technology. So you have a couple cameras in the exam room, and you have microphones that are listening to what you and the doctor are discussing. And then the computer tries to, you know, just like you can record this session, you can also record this session and send it to another application that'll transcribe this session for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you had another program that could not only transcribe it, but maybe extract the key findings. And so maybe summarize our conversation and say, here's the 3 points that Dean made, and here's the good points that John C. made. And you know, sort of write a one-page synopsis of this long discussion. And that's what the doctor needs. And so the question is, can the computer summarize what happened in the visit? So it knows, and it knows that, you know, it'd like to know, what are your problems? What are your findings, like your vital signs? And, you know, do you have a, you know, cloudy vision, or can you hear? What does your chest sound like? Things like that. And it'll summarize all that. And then the doctor will say, you know, I think I'm going to put you on this new medication, or I think you ought to get a chest x-ray or something like that. And the computer would do all that and listen and create the note. And so organizations right now are just testing that stuff out. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Like, how will the doctor still get paid the same amount for this kind of work? Well, it'll eliminate, like right now we have these billing clerks that sit behind the scenes after the doctor sees you and writes these notes. Someone looks at all the things they wrote down and then itemizes a bill for you, and you get billed for, you know, he did a chest x-ray, or he did a, you know, a test on you or something like that, that he gets paid for. And we've eliminated that person's job with the computer doing all this work. And so once again, you know, the computer will allow us to do new things that we've never done before, which should be good, but it will also probably have some unintended consequences.
Right. And of course, there's, I think, one of the biggest concerns since artificial intelligence really came to the stage and people started talking about it was, of course, the elimination of these jobs and what that would mean for the economy. But also just thinking from a practical perspective of how that could be applied, it could be a very slippery slope as to how much such a technology chooses to summarize the notes that it's given. Because something that could seem very mundane, like a detail for one patient, could make all the difference for another patient if it means making the difference between diagnosing a disease or recognizing that a medication they're using is starting to have negative side effects and maybe that needs to be changed. And I think it would take a lot of development and working on this technology for an artificial intelligence model to be able to see that in the same way that a doctor might be able to look at all of these bullet points and pick up on what is important and maybe what could have been excluded from that summary. So it's very interesting to think about kind of the resources that it's going to take to get to the point where these technologies work. And maybe if there was a more efficient solution for clinicians right now compared to these models that would be used in the future.
Or we could record them and go back and rerun the raw data again. You know, in 5 years, our systems will be a lot better. Maybe we could redo it again and learn what mistakes we made in the past. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, we just never even imagined doing in the past, we can do now, you know, in one afternoon. And so that opens up the possibilities for new kinds of discoveries, I hope.
Definitely. And I think we already kind of talked about this, but are there any particular advancements that you've maybe learned about recently or cautionary tales as well that would be helpful in keeping in mind as we see this whole scene develop?
Well, you know, like my whole life is about cautionary tales and trying to improve safety. I mean, the most interesting thing I saw recently was a 21-year-old kid, I'll call him, 21 years old, was able to hack into a electronic prescribing system and prescribe, I don't know, like 18,000 prescriptions for different opioids. And so then he had people all over the country going and picking those up and then selling them. So bad actors can use the AI just like the good people can use the AI. And so we're going to have criminals using AI to break into things. So just like it can write code to help you make a website, it can also write code to help you break into a website or take over a website or impersonate someone else. And so to me, that's always a big issue. And so, you know, all the ransomware and the attacks on patient data that we're seeing is really worrisome, because it could turn out that people will become too worried to go to the doctor because they're afraid that someone will steal their data or steal their identity or something like that. And then that would be a huge tragedy if people stop going to the doctor. That would not be good for your health.
I'm going to be completely honest. That is a very terrifying story. And especially, at least from my perspective, for the discussions that we've had so far in this season, talking about digital health. And of course, it's a very important conversation, but so far we've really just focused on what problems artificial intelligence could have when it's being applied in the right way and within healthcare and trying to use it for good, ways that it could still go wrong and end up having ethical and legal medical complications that we need to think about, but also thinking about the other side where it's working properly, it's working optimally, and then you use it for nefarious purposes is, I think, very scary to think about. And I definitely don't want to contribute to all the fear that I think we've seen in the public with thinking about artificial intelligence, because we're still far away from having to think about an apocalyptic scenario by any means. But it's definitely something that we need to keep in mind and be more aware of as these technologies are developing and as they're becoming more readily accessible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you think about all the other technologies we've had, I think we always think about guns to protect yourself. You never think that someone's going to use it to hurt you. And right. So you never think that people will have, that cars would be dangerous. I mean, cars changed like the civilization as we know it, allowed us to move around and things like that. And so definitely the unintended consequences of inappropriate uses of technology are hard to predict and hard to deal with and keep good people employed for a long time. I mean, that's why our government spends so much time trying to, you know, use computers to identify criminals. And then we get into these privacy issues and is that the right way they should do it? And so now we're getting into these science fiction movie type things, but they can do that kind of stuff. I mean, they already do that at airports to try to recognize, you know, people that shouldn't be flying and things like that. So we're going into a, you know, sort of uncharted territory on how we're using the computer and what we're doing. And when you're going into uncharted territory, you need to be extra careful. You're an explorer and you need to be worried about, more worried than when you're going somewhere where you don't, where you know where you're going and you know what's going to expect.
Yeah. And I suppose that's a trade-off that comes with any kind of technological advancement. There's always some way that it can go wrong, and there's so many ways that it can be used for good. So that's the work of the future, figuring out where to balance it.
You guys are going to be busy.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of work to do. Yeah.
Or
The thing
clean
is,
up our
like,
mess, or to clean up our mess, one or the other.
yes. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. I definitely learned a lot today, and I feel like every time I sit down to have a conversation about artificial intelligence, and it feels like I've already seen it all and learned it all, there's always something new to be considered. So I had a great time talking with you today, and we really appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thanks a lot. It was great talking to you. See you later. Bye.
Thank you.